Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com or live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us, as he does every Wednesday here on the show, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former NHL scout, he is Jason Bukala. Jason, thank you as always. How are you today?
Great, fellas. How are you?
We're doing very, very well. We're getting into full off-season mode here, studying the Canucks and what they might do. And I understand that you've also been doing a bit of a deep dive into where the Canucks stand. I don't believe the article is up at sportsnet.ca yet, but I'm sure it will soon be for our listeners to go have a read. And, you know, just in general, what are your, as you've gone through the process and kind of done the work and dug into where the Canucks stand, what are your kind of big picture thoughts about the challenges and maybe some of the opportunities ahead of them this summer?
Yeah, it's you know, it was quite a process, to be honest with you. You know, it was interesting. Basically, what I did was I started with Toronto. I'm going to go through all the Canadian franchises, but Vancouver was next up on my docket. And my approach was similar to what we would normally. It's basically what happens in hockey operations at the end of the season, before the draft, and obviously in the lead up to free agency. So, taking total stock of the entire organization, draft capital wise, you know, our top prospects. Obviously, taking a look at our pending UFAs, RFAs, our salary cap opportunities and restrictions, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, it was quite a process. I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, I enjoyed, you know, to be honest with you, the entire Canucks season this year. I thought that it was fascinating to watch the evolution of the group. Having said that, you know, you can't fall too much in love with the result, because I'm sure they want to get to another level still. And they have some pressing questions and some opportunities ahead of them here in the summer with the amount of movement kind of coming off this roster. So it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out.
So what would you say stands out to you as kind of job number one or priority number one for the Canucks going into the summer?
Well, I mean, even in the Nashville series, let's assume that we're good enough to be a playoff team if I'm the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, it's hard to get in every year. We all know that. Is, you know, everybody in the league knows that it's hard to get into the playoffs. But once you're there, you know, what did you learn? And some of the things that I learned this year about the Canucks was that obviously we weren't generating as much offense or as much opportunity to produce offense. Throughout the lineup, like, there wasn't enough protection. Like, we didn't come in enough layers, if you will. And that was, that's something that stood out for me. On balance, I thought that our penalty killing and the defense, the way that we played on balance, I mean, there were some, you know, some anomalies in there, but on balance, it was pretty solid, not bad. And obviously the evolution of Seelovs in the back or between the pipes is something to be aware of going forward as well. So, honestly, though, my challenge, and I listened to Patrick Alvin at the end of the year, you know, they want to get quicker. They want to add more scoring. You know, certain things that I took from, you know, reading or primarily listening to him and then just kind of reading the tea leaves, if you will. So I've tried to add more speed and more depth scoring into my projected lineup for the Canucks next year with the available cap space that they have.
With so much money expiring, right? I mean, you've got Lindholm, you've got Hronek up, you've got Zadorov, Myers, Cole, Bluger, Lafferty. This club's looking at somewhere in the mid-20s in terms of flexibility. I mean, you could probably bring in a couple of big-ticket items and still have, you know, the $11 million you maybe want to flesh out, like your third pair and your bottom six. With how this sort of shakes out, is this one of those summers where you think the club should go about trying to keep this group together, given the guts that they showed collectively in the postseason? Or is it one where you kind of have to be ruthless and just seek to improve?
Geez, a little bit of both, to be honest with you. Like, so let's start with Hronek, first of all, because I've read and listened to the Martin Nikash rumors, you know, that are floating around out there as an example. And my thing with Hronek, and I have to get something off my chest, first of all, some guys just aren't programmed for media availabilities, and some people are. Philip Hronek clearly is not, by the way. Like, that was, I know you guys have probably already talked about it, but that was a car accident watching him try to address the media last week. I don't like that stuff personally for me. But anyways, I digress. You know, right shot defensemen that play the way Hronek plays at the age of 26. I know that things fell off in the back of the season. I'm not giving them a hall pass here at all, but those guys are really hard to find. And don't forget that the management group, they gave up quite a bit, a first rounder, a second rounder. You know, they kind of, you know, that trade came out of left field for me that when it happened, they really rolled the dice. I find it hard to believe that they're going to come off of Hronek based on how much they've invested in that already. So, I have Hronek coming back on my roster. You know, he's got Arbrights. You know, I don't, you know, his QO is like 5.5. I'm hoping that we can get a bridge deal done with him. If we go to arbitration and it's some ridiculous award, I honestly, I don't know where we're going to go with it. So I need more information behind the scenes, I guess, is what I'm telling you in terms of that strategy. But for now, I have him accepting his QO, coming back at 5.5, and we're going to adjust that going forward. But beyond that, guys, there's some hard decisions that had to be made. And that included Ilya Mihaev. I've on my roster for next year, I bought him out. There's just not enough substance for the value. Like, that's way too much money. And I need to pay Dakota Joshua. I need to bring in maybe a Chandler Stevenson, maybe a Duclair who, you know, the Duke travels around all over the place, but he scores goals, right? And he plays fast. So, yep. You know, there's things here that I have to do. So just for transparency, and people can throw rocks at it tomorrow, but I'll drop a few tidbits here. Like, I've got the Canucks bringing in DeBrusque, Duclair, re-upping Joshua, and bringing in Chandler Stevenson. I've also got them adding adding Alex Carrier as a right shot D, okay, and bringing back Myers on low end money for 1 year. The reason that some of this had to come, and by the way, I left about $1.3 million left in the piggy bank because, you know, we need to be able to recall. We need more than 20 bodies. So, I mean, if that's an extra defenseman, call it Juleson. If it's an extra forward, call it Ratu coming out of camp. Whatever the case may be, you understand where I'm going with it. Or, you know, maybe somebody you pick up on the wire like you did with Lafferty. So, last year. The thing of it is that, you know, it's not an exact science, but it's – there was at one point I was looking at even bringing back Lindholm, you know, but – again, I'm trying to balance out this lineup and going forward, like not next year, but the year after, we have a monstrous buyout situation happening 2 years in a row on OEL. Don't forget, like Ekman Larson's buyout goes to like 5 million, almost 4.7, I think, just right around the time that Hughes' contract is coming due. Like, the timing couldn't be worse.
I know. Yeah, it's tough. First of all, I love it. You've got the Canucks signing just about all of my favorite guys, including Alexandre Carrier.
Wow.
Who struggled, unfortunately. He wasn't great in the first round series, Nashville versus Vancouver. So hopefully Tocchet's wiped that from his memory.
He's a good player, guys. He's a good player.
Boots. Yeah, he's awesome.
Say that again. Yeah, he is. He blocks shots. He's not a big body. He can transport the puck. He's got a little bit of offense to him, play second unit power play in the pinch. But he blocks a lot of shots and gets in the way. I think he's got great value.
Yeah, he's a tough player. The debate we've been having over the course of the show, I'll just get you to chime in on it, and it's sort of a follow-up on Hronek. Because, you know, thinking about what this team needs, I've kind of been making the argument that of Vancouver's expiring guys, like top pair right-handed defenseman fits in well with Quinn Hughes. That has to be the top priority, even if you're disappointed with what you saw in the playoffs and down the stretch from him. And, you know, one thing that Patrick Alvin mentioned during his availability and that, you know, people in our inbox like to talk about is, well, you have to see him drive his own pair. And my view is, if you've got a partnership that works as well as Hughes and Hronek, who cares? Like, who cares if he drives his own pair or not? I'm happy to have him on a team where he can help Quinn Hughes elevate. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I'm not buying into the drive your own pair thing. I'm not, like, I really don't care. I mean, when if Hughes is playing 24, 25 minutes a night and Hronek's going to be, like, Hronek played over 23 minutes a night, guys. And, you know, he might be capable of a couple more minutes. I don't know. But on average, let's call it 24. Let's split hairs here at 24. Like, I want my two best guys on the ice. If it's 24 minutes, like, over a third of the game, I can have my two best players on the back end, on the ice, I'm in. Like, I'm sorry, I'm in. It causes chaos in the offensive zone. It frees them up to do the things that they like to do, you know, within their skill set. And, you know, I'm not of that ilk. Like, I let's roll them out together. That to me, that gave them those two together. That was the best version of their pairings, whoever they were paired with all year. That was the best version of their pairings when they played together. That's the bottom line for me.
And Books, I have no problem playing them together, but I think it's a lot easier to stomach when you're paying Filip Hronek what he was making this year versus, you know, potentially 7.5 plus going forward. Because my issue with it is then you're still left looking for that guy who can really anchor your second pair and make it a high-end contender type of second pair, right? Because I think you look at the teams left, and with the exception of Edmonton, I guess we know some of their struggles with Darnell Nurse right now, but the other three teams have guys on the second pairing that they feel really, really good about playing, right?
100%. So, see, that's where the extra layer of information that I have to build up. I'm not paying Hronek 725. I'm not going there. I'm sorry. Like, as much as I like the player and I know how much the Canucks have been invested in the player, I'm not going to 725. Like, I know that I spitball. Like, do I have a crush on Mackenzie Weegar as a player? Yeah, I do. I think Mackenzie Weegar is a hell of a player. And I think it's a strong comparable. Like Weegs' value to the Calgary Flames could be similar to what Hronek's is. And there's a comparable in your backyard, salary wise, at what, 625 or something like that. So I'm not going to 725 for the exact reason you just said, Jay. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm going to then have to shop somewhere else and balance things out with another guy somewhere along the line here. You know, I started at Carrier at 325 in my model for 3 years. There's going to be other guys like that. So we can't get carried away there, because if we lock in at 725 for any type of term, and then you bump up against OEL's bio, and then you got to pay Hughes, I mean, we're in a real pickle at that point.
Yeah, again, that's go ahead, Dretz, but that's my concern for sure.
Books, you love Mackenzie Weegar. Did you draft him or something in the seventh round? Is this a top pair guy you drafted out of your region or something? You're
well,
a big
no,
Weegar guy,
there,
huh?
Paul, listen, let's spread the wealth. Paul Gallagher, Scott Luce, Aaron Janelle, everybody. It was a team effort there. But, I mean, that's an easy one, right? I could pick some other guys in the NHL. But in that pay grade is what I'm talking about, right? Like, actually,
I know,
you know
I just
what?
Got to carve you, bud.
No, listen. I'm open for business. Don't worry about it. I'm not taking it personally. But if that would be an awesome pairing, like Hughes and Weegar, that would be a great pairing. Like that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. So, and then I'm bringing back Z too, but I'm not bringing back Z. I've read some absolute ridiculousness, like $6 million for Zadorov. I'll tell you right now, unless I fall off a turnip truck and crack my head open tomorrow, I'm not paying him $6 million. I liked what he did in the playoffs or whatever else, but that's not happening on my watch either. That's way too rich.
Well, and on Zadorov, it's interesting because as much as the, you know, kind of first and foremost, they need that scoring punch at the top of the lineup, you know, a big part of their success this year and going into the playoffs was kind of remaking their identity and the size on the back end, but the physicality up front with Dakota Joshua as well. And, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting. We had somebody text in about this earlier as well. How do you prioritize kind of retaining that identity without, as you say, going into some silly places for the, you know, the big players that helped you make that identity this year?
Yeah, you manage your term, I guess. You know, you manage your budget with term and then you kind of flex what the year-over-year salary structure looks like. But, I mean, let's not get carried away here. Zadorov was a 17-minute guy in regular season, absolutely spiked in the playoffs, great value in the playoffs, got everything out of him that the team needed, the Vancouver Canucks did, for sure. So that elevated his value. But, you know, we can't, you know, as a management team, I'm sure they're sitting there staring that they have a ceiling on that too. His next contract doesn't start with a 5, in my estimation. You just can't go there. Like, Susie's at 3.25, And nobody can sit here in a meeting and tell me that Zadorov is worth twice as much as Soucy when Soucy's healthy. That doesn't make any sense to me. So it's all got to fit, and we've got to get more balance on within the forward group. Like Dakota Joshua's value in playoffs and hard games down the stretch. Like when he got hurt in Chicago, I think it was Chicago, right? He fought whatever that happened there. After that, I really missed. I felt like the group missed his presence in the lineup. And then in the playoffs, I felt like it. You know, Vancouver really, you could see his value. So there's a guy that's going to probably at least triple his salary, and I'm all in on that. But again, there's a ceiling there as well. So I don't know. It's they're kind of in a tough spot because again, I bought Mejia about, which was like 1.15 to reinvest the dollars in other places. But that OEL one at almost $5 million 2 years in a row, the timing can't be worse. So it's gonna be delicate for the next 2 years here.
Yeah, so I've tended to be on the of the belief, Books, that buying out Mikheyev, while I definitely see the case for it, I just worry a little bit about how that 1.5, you throw that 1.5 because it's 1.5 for 4 years onto the 4.8 that you're talking about with OEL that's coming down the pike. And it's like all of a sudden you've got $6 million plus in dead space on the last year of, your Vezina nominee goaltender at $5 million on the last year of his deal. You've got $6 million in dead space on the last year of your Norris nominee defenseman's contract. The next season, he's making 7.3. You've got $6 million in dead space. It's like you almost neuter the advantage of sort of having these two star level guys making $12 million combined. If you throw that much dead money on the books, do you hold out any hope that Mikheyev can bounce back to like even just be like a third line contributor the way he was in Toronto?
Yeah, I think he can be a third line contributor, but not a 4.75. Like it's just too much.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is the bottom line for me. Listen, I don't have an exact perfect answer for you. Both sides of the ledger, the way you just presented it, they both kind of stink a little bit, don't they? Like, which one, pick your poison type of a thing. In the big picture, though, for me, the group has to continue on its upward trajectory, and you try and sustain momentum, try and continue to build out culture. And so that's the other thing that I was trying to establish when people get to read my piece and start, picking it apart, because that's human nature. But when they get to that, I was trying to not only build in what the ask was of the general manager, but also like the type of culture, like DeBrusk coming from Boston with that type of culture. So, what can we learn from there? Stevenson, Stanley Cup champion, And these types of things. So it's there's no right answer one way or the other. It stinks, but I can't be paying Mejia 4.75 when I feel like I can get a guy on the wire coming out of camp every year for about 1.5, and that covers, it covers my bases, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yep. Yikes. It's a good debate because I definitely see your case.
There's no right answer. Like there isn't, but this is exactly what it is. It's a healthy debate. And then you're going to roll the dice and somebody's going to be very wrong. And then you're going to get crucified for it. That's what happens.
In this market, never. No, Books. Absolutely not. It won't happen. Hey, I did want to ask you, you mentioned Natchez, and we've heard his name in connection with the Canucks. I won't just limit this to Natchez, but, obviously a lot of talk of finding that winger for Pettersson specifically, right? We saw JT Miller and Brock Besser work as a duo really, really well this season into the playoffs, but Pettersson didn't really have that guy, that reliable partner to play with. I'm not making an excuse for Pettersson. He needs to be better, but it's also a position you want to fill. In your kind of mind's eye, what are the qualities they should be looking for to pair next to Elias Pettersson?
Well, play driver for sure. So that when he's transporting it, he's not necessarily transporting it by himself. And what I mean by that is that, it's nice to have two out of the three of your guys that are burners. Like when Miller, Besser, and Pettersson are going well together, Miller plays a high octane game with obviously upper level bump. Besser's not a burner whatsoever. He's a shooter. If you're going to get a guy in the, you know, I would argue that if you were able to bring in somebody like a Nakish, just saying, or a Gensel, like I'm just throwing names out there, that you could actually play somebody like a Dakota Joshua on the other side, because those other two guys would be burning and you know, creating offense, and the other guy needs to bump, create space. I love Zach Hyman. Just go to the paint and create chaos even. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's what you need. You need a guy that is going to be able to transport it, push the pace. But here's the other thing. I need a guy as well who's going to go get it a little bit more often, because Pettersson, injured or not, his go get the puck fell off in the back half of the season. And I know you're like, game 7, he was great. Like, you know, he was throwing reverse checks and his pace looked good and all this other stuff. And then I hear he's dealing with a knee injury at the exits. And here's my take on that, guys. Every guy in the NHL right now playing for a Stanley Cup, every one of them is dealing with something. We all know that. It's just, yep. It's just the nature of the beast. Everybody's dealing with something. So the one thing I would say on Nakish is this. I don't like noise coming from Europe when people go back home and starts beaking off about, you know, being unhappy back home about their role and yada, yada. Nikush has always been a play driver. He's carried the flag in Czechia for as long as I can remember. He was kind of that new revolution of player that came over and was really driving hockey. There's a resurgence there. But you're going to come over here and tell me, and you're going to tell Rick Tocchet, I got to play in the first power play unit or the first penalty kill. Like, come on. I don't know when the last time anybody walked into Tocchet's office and looked him right in the eyes and said that, but I'll probably say it's never.
All right. We'll end on that note. Books, really appreciate the time and can't wait to read your piece going up at sportsnet.ca sometime soon, hopefully today, doing a deep dive into the Canucks offseason. Thanks for doing this, as always.
No problem, guys. Thanks for listening as I just kind of went off on a tangent there. Appreciate you guys.
It's great. We appreciate it very much.
You build it, bud.
Thanks, Matt.
Have a great day. See you, boys.
That is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and also former NHL scout. And yeah, like, come on. He's allowed to be proud of identifying Mackenzie Weegar in the 7th round. Turns into the career he's had. Absolutely.
Oh,
man.
I love it.
I'd be bragging about that a lot more than Books is if I had that on my resume.
Heck yeah. No, I had to point it out.
Me and Buchla, both big Mackenzie Weegar guys.
Yeah, he's good. I like Mackenzie Weegar. He's awesome.
Does Buchla have you waffling at all? It sounded like maybe a little bit on the no Mikheyev buyout.
No.
Take. No.
No, no. I mean, I think I think the idea of like the momentum side of it, the culture side of it is interesting and something I sort of didn't account for, but it, you know, you have to find a way to do it without like, yeah, it's a big cap benefit. And if I have to go, you know, my counter argument would be, okay, so we're going to have to go cheaper than getting all of DeBrusk, Duclair, and Chandler Stephenson. You're going to have to pick two of the three, and then we're going to have to try and like find a Pew Suter type winger, you know, in August, because the most we can do with Mikheyev is do a retained salary transaction, which is only going to save us like 1.2 as opposed to the full 3.2. You know, the long-term hit, we just can't have that dead money going forward, like beyond the next 2 years. That would sort of just be my counter. It doesn't change my opinion that that's the most prudent course of action for the Canucks. And that in fact, they really should not be adding anything to their buyout bill. But I think he makes a good argument when he focuses on like the idea of the importance of sustained momentum, that you really don't want to risk taking a step back after this season was such a snow day for your fans and for your players.
All right. Producer Lena is just telling me that apparently Jason's article came out yesterday, which I was not aware of. I looked for it and I did not see it. So my bad. Would have been great to read that and do some prep before this interview. But apparently it's up at sportsnet.ca right now. On that note, we'll take a break. Final segment coming up. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts in the inbox. We'll try to get to some of those in the final segment of Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. And lots of thoughts coming in to the inbox throughout the course of the show. And as I mentioned to Jason Buchla in the last segment, we had this text come in earlier from Amro the actor, who says, how do you value toughness regarding our free agent list? This is the first season where the Canucks looked physically imposing. And as I was saying to Buchla, you know, they obviously value that part of their identity immensely, right? They went out of the way to bring in Carson Soucy, to trade for Nikita Zadorov midseason. Elias Lindholm added to that element as well. I do think this is part of the reason why there's optimism and momentum towards bringing Tyler Myers back, right? And, you know, as we kind of talked about earlier in the show, I don't know if it's as easy as one of Zadorov or Myers is coming back, but it goes such a long way to keeping some of that identity, especially on the blue line, if you just sign one of them, right? And we haven't always thought about Tyler Myers as that, you know, super physical, super mean player in the same way that Nikita Zadorov is. He doesn't have that same kind of swagger to him, but he is a really, really big defenseman. And as he showed in the playoffs, he can be physical, right? He can play that aggressive type of game. So to Amro's point about how do you kind of value that toughness element, I think if they go out and bring back Tyler Myers, I mean, it's a combination of all of these things, right? The fact that it's going to be a lot cheaper than Zadorov, but also the fact that it does retain some of that toughness. And I think that's how they're going to approach it, right? Where it's valuable, but you also have to find the most cost-effective ways to do it. You can't fall in love with the aggression that Nikita Zadorov has, the physicality of Dakota Joshua, because then you're going to make mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one because Myers brought it and played to that identity consistently in the playoffs, but that hasn't been his MO.
That's not his regular season identity. That's not like it reminds me a little bit of Alex Edler in his heyday, right? Where it was just a different level of physicality and aggression in the playoffs.
Yeah. Whereas Nikita Zadorov brings it literally.
Yeah.
He brings it in media scrums. He brings it off the ice. He brings it with his tailoring.
he's incapable of not bringing it, of not going to the max at every possible moment of every possible activity.
So that's different. And look, I think it's important. I'm not going to be here and say it's not. I think it's important, and I think it's worth paying a premium for. Or do. I just think you have to be mindful of all the other things that the Canucks have that are worth paying a premium for, you know? And I think at the end of the day, balance is important. Toughness is important, right? Third line center is super important. Mm-hmm. Lots of defenders, like having good defensemen, super important. Speed. Controlling play and generating the sorts of chances you need to outscore the opposition, especially when you're a structurally sound team at the top of your lineup. That's what the Canucks couldn't do against Edmonton. Like, that's the engine that all four of the remaining teams have at a greater degree than the Canucks do in the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. Like, to me, that's ultimately what you have to be most, like, willing to pay for, most willing to pay a premium for. And that's really what we're talking about, right? It's a hard cap league. You can't have it all.
Yeah, you're not going to have a perfect team.
You have
team.
To make hard choices.
You're going to have to sacrifice some things.
And you know, toughness isn't very far down my list of things that I'd like to see this team sacrifice. Like, I loved the guts that they played with. I thought the size advantage mattered. You know, Books brought up the injury in Chicago for Dakota Joshua. Do you remember there was like those games before they inserted Vasily Podkolzin and then just getting a heavy body in, even though Podkolzin doesn't play to the identity the way Dakota Joshua does, made such a massive difference again. It was like, oh yeah, they just needed some weight somewhere up front. So yeah, I mean, I think it's the sort of thing that I sort of think it's the, you know, it's something they have to be willing to pay for. I just think with $25 million in space, like, start with the big swings. You know, that this is why I'm banging the table on Hronek. And again, I'm an unlikely guy to do it. You know, like, I really thought Hronek was massively overvalued by this market in the early part of the year. Kind of won me over as the year went along. I think there's some limitations, especially below the hash marks in the defensive end. But I also don't think those limitations matter an awful lot less when you play with Quinn Hughes, who has the puck on his stick all the time when you're on the ice. And I think the way that he plays from the blue line in and the way that he's just like constantly in the way makes him such a good fit. I mean, in the way and as a positive, right? Like, he's got that rusty Klesla ability to obstruct without being penalized for it. That I you know, there's a skill to that, baby. Like, there's real value in that. He's expert level at that. I think it gives him sneaky defensive value. Even if, you know, there's a lot of 50-50 battles along the wall that he tends to come out on the wrong side of. But again, Hronek for me is kind of like the staple number one thing that I think they should prioritize, because he's the piece that helps do the thing the Canucks need most, which is generate scoring chances, contribute to the act of outscoring your opposition in those premium minutes at the top of the lineup in a way that I think none of the other pending or expiring Canucks players really do. And it's sort of why after the Hronek thing, you know, my obsession anyway is, and I think the clubs is find a star level contributor for the top six, like for the top of your lineup. Like, you don't want to go into a series next year against Eichel, Hertl, Mark Stone, and whichever of like Stevenson and Marchessault, but Barbashev on and on, that star-studded Vegas lineup. You don't want to go into the playoffs against Dreisaitl and McDavid again and be unable to generate shots, be unable to generate scoring chances, look sort of lost when your deflections aren't beating bad goaltending, right? Like that, because that's so much of Vancouver's offense was on goalie makes terrible mistake. Stuart Skinner looks unplayable, right? Like, I want to see this team be able to find answers against good defensive teams without it seeming like they're stuck in the mud so frequently, you know, until they pull their goalie, because that's where they can score. Man, maybe they should just consider doing that more. But seriously,
really,
right?
Aggressive.
It's super cool to have the sort of team where I'm saying stuff like, man, they have real guts. They don't quit. They're a hard team to kill, you know? But you know what's really cool is not being down 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this team had so many games where they had to pull it out of the fire, you know? It'd be nice if they could build leads a little more frequently next year. It might help them, you know, end series earlier and you know, not go 1-3 with a chance to advance and on and on. So to me, that's like the top priorities. And it's like, once you've done that, because again, I think you can afford multiple big ticket pieces this summer. Once you've taken a big swing on a big top six upgrade, and in my opinion, retained Hronek, found some sort of accommodation, then you're still going to have 11 plus, 12 plus, like you're still going to have the flex to go out and find or prioritize or retain, you know, some of that size. And I think you're right. Myers helps, but it's also probably insufficient. You're probably going to need more than that in terms of that aspect of the Canucks' game. But it, again, just like lower order priorities for me than that ability to, you know, outscore opponents consistently 5-on-5 at the top of the lineup.
Well, and to your point about, you know, are you willing to pay a premium for it? And yeah, the answer is probably yes, but are you willing to pay multiple premiums to multiple different guys for it, right? And that's probably where the rubber really hits the road, especially on somebody like Nikita Zadorov. And I think the Myers versus the Zadorov conversation kind of illustrates what their approach is going to have to be. Because, yes, if we're just talking about pure physicality and toughness and aggression, we all know Nikita Zadorov brings more of that than Tyler Myers. But you have to go for the more cost-effective, if also actually slightly less ideal, solution in Tyler Myers, right? Because then that frees you up to do all those other things. And I think they're probably going to have to repeat that decision-making process up and down the lineup. I know we heard from Rick Dhaliwal that they're not close with Dakota Joshua. I wouldn't write that one off just yet. There's still lots of time to get a deal done. But, you know, I thought it was also telling that we heard from Patrick Alvin talking about, you know, the ability to find the next Dakota Joshua, right? As, okay, that's... yes, we would love to keep Dakota Joshua, but whether he's here or not, we're also going to have to keep this process up of finding the cost-effective guys who can bring certain things like that to the lineup. I think that's ultimately is going to be the challenge. Is it's not as simple as, you know, oh, hey, we got to pay a premium to keep Dakota Joshua and to keep Nikita Zadorov. You have to find the really cost-effective ways to do it, because to your point, you can find cost-effective ways, as the Canucks have, to bring in those types of players. It's much more difficult to find cost-effective guy who can elevate Elias Pettersson, right? Cost-effective guy who can, you know, help your power play, help power play one. That's a much, much more difficult task than finding the energy and finding the physicality at the bottom of your lineup.
Yeah, and you know, you brought up Ethan Bear. We never actually had the argument, but I guess this team has shown you can find cost-effective guy who can complement Quinn Hughes or sort of be like the poor man's Thomas Harley on Vancouver's top pair. But, you know, again, I think the Bear one, like, we don't really, we have proof of concept that a puck, like the Bear experience is proof of concept that a puck mover with Quinn Hughes can get more out of Quinn Hughes as a two-way piece than like a defensive expert that, like,
yep.
You know, I remember I asked Quinn Hughes about it in midseason. I said, you know, there was always this idea that you had to play with a more defensive-minded partner. And it turns out, you know, now across like 800 minutes, it's really that you should play with a more offensive guy. What do you think about this? And he goes, well, I'm the defensive guy. Right? It's like, yeah, let's go. That's an awesome answer. But so, you know, could you bring in, you know, an Erik Gustafsson type? I mean, maybe, but man, I still think there's a massive gulf there. So anyway, I'm going to stop my Hronik hobby horse thing because, but truly, like, entering the off season for me, that's like, I can't get past that as number one. Like, the number one thing that I think this club needs to be really protective of is making sure that the one, you know, that the piece that they are, the bird they already have in hand, the rare profile they already have in hand is like maintained and maintained it away, you know, in a way that doesn't harm you too badly. I mean, I don't see a world given his arbitration situation and production this season where Hronik's next deal doesn't hurt a little bit. I don't think you're getting value or a steal type value out of his next contract, but I think that's okay. Just given, you know, the premium position that he plays, that he's the guy to pay a premium on, unfortunately, and paying a premium for, you know, some of the other stuff, size, third line center, faceoffs, penalty killing, steadiness, you know, guts. I'm here for it. I think this team can definitely start to approach things like they're looking for finishing pieces as opposed to, you know, sort of like the value accumulation mode that I've thought they should be in a little more discipline in past years. But, you know, I still think you need to be ruthless in that sort of prioritization.
And I will say on Hronik, a couple of people texted in earlier. Brandon in Vancouver said, I think it's been a bit hypocritical to criticize Hronik this much because of the playoffs. When a player has a good postseason, we're always cautious not to get caught up with it. But if they have a bad playoffs, we're too quick to write them off. And Mike, the urologist from Brockville, says, our opinion is getting largely skewed by a short sample of playoff games when it comes to opinions on Lindholm, Hronik, and Zadorov. Especially, we forget so quickly about the long season they had. And I think the point overall, now with Hronik, it was really the second half of the season, right? It wasn't just the playoffs where the decline in production really started. So I think that's important context. But the overall point of whether it's they had a really good playoffs and everyone's excited about them now, or they struggled in the playoffs and people have soured on them, like the right answer is to take not just the entire season, but their recent career into consideration when you're trying to make these decisions, right? Like, you cannot base it positive or negative on just the 13 playoff games, you're going to make mistakes paying guys like that. You're going to make mistakes not paying guys and getting scared of guys like that because of 13 playoff games.
Yeah, I mean, you want to know a secret? You know who's a lot better than Elias Lindholm at this stage of his career? Bo Horvat.
Sure.
I mean, I don't even think that's controversial, right?
No, I don't think so at all.
Is it?
No.
I mean, Lindholm scored 15 goals and had 44 points this year, and we're, you know, take 7 times 7, take a $50 million total valuation to the bank, and, you know, he'll probably be decent value for it, especially if he goes to the right situation. I mean, he's been tied to Boston for forever, mm-hmm. and you know what? Like, you throw him with a play-driving winger of Pastrnak or Marchand's quality, like, I think that could work. Like, I think that could be a really good fit. I think there's a chance that that happens, is a really good fit, and there's Canucks fans wringing their hands about his departure. But that doesn't mean that the Canucks have that type of, you know,
no.
There's no Pastrnak foil in Vancouver. You know, there's no Marchand in Vancouver, right? Like, Vancouver has decent wingers, but there's no one at that level who can, like, you know, help him through the neutral zone and who he can play off of and just, like, find open space and, you know, be really hard to play against away from the puck and do the things that he's unquestionably really good at. And that's sort of where, you know, if you end up committing that space to Lindholm, you know, like, if you end up committing that space to Lindholm and walking away from Hronek, it's like, what do we even do here?
No, that's what I was saying earlier in the show. It's like, but wait, we traded the guy we didn't want to pay big money at third line center for Hronek. And I was like, what? Like, and then it would be very odd.
And then people, like, I saw a text in the inbox, and I'm sorry, I can't refer to it because it's just like, I haven't kept track of it well enough. But someone asked, would you rather have Hronek or Brendan Dillon and Martin Nekash?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's like, okay, the problem is Brendan Dillon really, first of all, big fan of the player. Like, I think Brendan Dillon's really good. I think Brendan Dillon, I'd probably see him as an upgrade on Ian Cole, right? In the same mold. And by the way, big fights, toughness, like that's the sort of, you know, if you have to lose Zadorov, but you're able to, you know, come to a relatively affordable agreement with Myers and you can find another hometown discount in Brendan Dillon.
Yep.
That's like the budget answer. That's like the value answer.
The money shoestring budget type of answer for sure.
Totally. And I don't know that there's a lot of daylight in terms of actual quality between Zadorov and Brendan Dillon. I just know that Zadorov plays the sort of game that, like, I love watching more than just about anyone else in hockey. So, you know, I'm a little biased more because of the aesthetic side of it than the hockey value side of it. Anyway, Brendan Dillon can't play the right side. You know, Brendan Dillon's not going to play top pair minutes for this team.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Nekash, huge fan. But if you have to pay at the top of your lineup to find that top six upgrade, like, you're ripping a hole in your lineup to fill another. Like, you're very much like the 1920s cartoon character trying to plug the holes in the dam. You know, like, you're just like sticking your fingers in the wall and it's getting worse and worse and the room's filling up and, you know, like,
yeah,
I think finding a way to address the top six that doesn't harm your defense or make, you know, rebuilding your defense even more difficult, because make no mistake, that's what the Canucks have to do this offseason. It's they're at the very least reconstructing, and I would say completely rebuilding their defense one way or another. Even if they maintain a lot of the same guys, right? Because you have to change the structure, the contractual structure to do it. So, you know, finding a way to land a player like that, I think, is essential, but you've got to find a way to do it without taking away one of your two, you know, unquestioned top four quality defenders out of the lineup.
It would have that type of move, right? Like, if Hronik's going the other way for Natchez, okay, Brendan Dillon is a side part of that, though, right? Like, that move would have to be paired with signing one of the high profile right shot UFAs. You would have to think, right? Unless you're also making another deal where you're trading futures for a younger right shot defenseman, right? Which I guess I could see. Something like that.
So, but you want to throw, like, Pesci in there or Montour.
Pesci, Matt Roy, you know, whoever, right? I think there's a couple other guys farther down the list.
I believe
as
it's
well.
What?
Sorry, yeah. Dylan DeMello, you know what I mean? Like, who's much further down the list, but right, there are a bunch of right shot defensemen out there. So I think it would have to be okay. Yeah. We have confidence in getting Pesci or whoever. They're going to do the job. We're comfortable with that fit, and that allows us to trade Filip Hronek. Is it a slam dunk, right? Because those guys are all older, so I don't know. But
yeah, I don't like it at all.
I can at least see the logic there.
I mean, I do too. But again, like, you're talking Montour is going to cost the same amount. He might cost more. He's 4 years older.
Montour to me is not a consideration just because of the cost.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're talking DeMello. Like, DeMello, only Montour among right-handed free agents, UFAs, had more points. He had 31 points and played 22 minutes a night. Like, you know, if Tanev's getting 4x5, like, DeMello's going to be second up for some team in that marketplace. He's probably going to get a very similar amount. So you remove Hronek from the lineup, you replace him with DeMello to save $2.5 million. Like, I don't know, that logic, that doesn't add up for me, man. Like, I'd rather pay the $2.5 million premium and have the 50-point guy that elevates Quinn Hughes offensively, or at least helps him elevate offensively.
It just comes down to what you're getting back in a Hronek deal, right? That's the discussion. Yeah. The discussion, there's two variables that we're just guessing at. One is how much you save and who guy X is that you're bringing in to replace Hronek, right? And what the salary difference is, and then what you're getting in return for Hronek. Those are the two key variables in this hypothetical.
Fair. And you know, if you're talking neck ash straight up, I can see it, but I still don't love it. You know, and if you're talking about, like, draft picks, and then you're going to sort of middleman it, kind of like they did when they acquired Hronek, right?
Yep.
You know, I don't know that his trade value is higher now than it was a year ago, even though he had a career year, because of the complication of his arbitration case, right? And the fact that his upside, like, hit, the fact that it worked out in some ways paradoxically kind of restrains his trade value, because it adds to the administrative headache and sort of the cap liability that he now represents to any acquiring team. And so it's kind of this, like, interesting dynamic where, by proving his hockey value to the extent he did on the timeline that he's on, in some ways his trade value is probably lower, not so much lower that we wouldn't look at that deal, like if they were able to get 2 second round picks for him or something. I still think we'd say, well, you'd be happy to pay that first round pick for the rental, given how well this season went. But it's not like, you know, an NBA Jam, he's on fire, tomahawk, 360 dunk. It's a little more complicated than that. It's shaded in gray.
All right, we will wrap it up there today. We will be back on the show tomorrow. Just so much more off-season speculation. I can hardly wait. It's going to be great. Shout out to Don Taylor and Rick Dalywell for joining us earlier on the crossover. And, of course, our guy Jason Buchla. And, by the way, vindication for me. Producer Lena says, actually, she does not believe that Book's piece on the Canucks has been posted to Sportsnet.ca yet. I think she just got a sneak preview behind the scenes at Sportsnet. So look out for that deep dive from Jason Buchla going up at Sportsnet.ca at some point soon. Here, we'll be back tomorrow for more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.